Hello and welcome to Promise. I'm your host, Sean. Here, we explore the promise of new technologies from synthetic biology to superconductors, and how science fiction is turning into science fact. Every episode, we cover new ground and pose the question, what is the world that we want to build? If you dream of shaping the future, you've come to the right place. In this episode, Ben and I talk about everything from real-time deepfake romances, to new battery tech, to dumb phones, and AIs predicting human motion and expression. All the topics begin to converge around social isolation, connection, and how emerging tech would look to fight it. Where do we draw the line between human and synthetic emotional connection? And how does that extend into our physical world? And finally, is this something we want? Or are we headed there anyway? All the speculation and more, coming right up. All right, welcome back, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Promise Podcast. As usual, joining me is my co-host, Ben. Ben, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Excited to have you. I think we have some interesting topics to cover today, see how they plot out into the future state. I think I might let you have the floor first to cover some of the interesting things that you found. Take it away.
Perfect, thank you. I found three articles this week that I'm going to talk about. The first one is about a group of researchers at the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Tech have developed a new type of battery. And I know that this comes around every few months. I feel like there's a new article, there's a new fad of, we've got this new battery tech, it's going to be brand new, and this is likely one of them. However, this one feels a little different, because rather than creating some brand new fancy tech that has been created only in a lab very specifically, this is actually using part of existing battery components. So they've taken a normal lithium ion battery and they've removed part of the components of the battery itself and replaced that with sodium variants of the battery. They're still using manufacturing parts from the lithium ion batteries, but they're able to create a more sustainable version. Sodium is about 500 times more abundant than lithium in the earth, so it's a lot easier to mine, it's a lot easier to gather. We've got a lot more of it, and it means that we're not going through as many of the mining and negative practices around the appropriation of lithium. The battery also has some technical aspects recorded that make it a little different than lithium. So it can charge in seconds, it charges very quickly, and it can dissipate very quickly as well. The hardest challenge for them was working on being able to store the capacitance of the battery, which is what they used the lithium ion components for. So it's very interesting. It might fall into the bucket of new battery tech that we see every month, but I think this is a really interesting step forwards in saying, we're not just making a new battery, but we've thought about the manufacturing process as well. And it could be a nice baby step on our way to some more robust battery technology in the future. My second one is diving into deepfakes and romance scams. I'm sure everybody has heard of deepfakes. If you haven't, it's essentially replacing a person's face digitally with another face. We can also do audio deepfakes where you replace the voice of a person with a different voice or cadence. There's been issues with romance scams developing and utilizing this technology to trick individuals into taking their money or scamming them in other ways. I'm not going to go too far into how they do it or how the scam works, but essentially this technology it started 5 or 6 years ago and it's ramped up so quickly that it started with needing a computer with a bunch of beefy GPUs and a lot of loading time, weeks, just to train it on a single face model. And now you can download an app on your phone that does the same thing. And I know that we see that all the time with software, but with software such as this, where it's changing the human aspect of an item or object or person in a digital scene, it's created this environment where individuals can entirely fabricate personas and fabricate anything they need in order to manipulate individuals online. Unfortunately, it's ubiquitous and it's easy to get access to and it's easy to set up, and these scammers are setting up using off-the-shelf software. They don't even need to make their own because the software is free and available to anybody who wants to download it. The tech has gotten better to the point that even cinemas and TV shows and movies are starting to use it in order for face replacements, which is very interesting. But with that comes advancement and potentially the negative side effects of people using it when they shouldn't. There's a lot more conversation about this, but unfortunate to see such an interesting piece of tech be used in a way where we're manipulating what the truth is. On a slightly more interesting or slightly happier note, I'll say, my third article is about a smiling robot. So a study came up in March this year where a group of researchers displayed how they trained a robot to smile at a human who was engaging with it, but they were able to smile at the same time as the human. So the robot was actually trained to register a smile coming and was able to predict a smile by 800 milliseconds, almost a whole second, before it actually occurred. And by doing this, the robot, aptly named Emo, was able to predict the smiles of humans and smile at the exact same time. I think there's a few interesting directions this could go. They did keep the face blue of this robot. It had a silicon blue face in order to avoid any uncanny valley issues. But it's definitely a fun one to see a smiling robot and all of the emotions that can be displayed with that. That's me. Sean, over to you.
Wonderful. I think I might start with the two that are probably most applicable to the articles that you've just shared. The first one, just piggybacking off of being able to predict human motion in order for a robot to engage in motion itself. A collection of researchers who are supported by DARPA, they have been able to effectively tokenize humanoid locomotion. When we talk about how ChatGPT works and other similar generative AI tools, they're effectively taking what's called a token, which is a fragment of information that commonly occurs together. So if you think about the word chair, might be split up into two tokens, CH together and AIR as another token. That would be two tokens. And the model predictively combines these tokens together to generate some text. What these researchers have done is combined tokenized information about human locomotion, effectively predicting what the next bit of motion is going to be if you have just taken a specific motion. And as a result, they've basically been able to create a walkable robot, a robot that is able to predict what the next thing it needs to do is based off of what it's just done, rather than specifically following some pre-programmed models on how it needs to move around a space. Really fascinating about how these humanoid robots could autonomously navigate their way through the physical landscape. Slightly creepy, but we might get into that in a little bit later. Cool, that's article number one. The second one comes from the New Yorker, covering what they call the burgeoning cottage industry, catering to beleaguered smartphone users desperate to escape their screens. So specifically, they're referring to the growth in the number of people wanting to use quote-unquote dumb phones or phones without touch screens and a whole bunch of apps on them. Basically, the phones of the early 2000s, like a Nokia 3310 and similar invincible bricks that we used to have back in the day. So much so, they covered a business called Dumb Wireless, which is a small e-commerce company, and they're doing $70,000 in revenue per month just helping people buy dumb phones, which kind of speaks a little bit to your article about deepfake scams and just perhaps like subconsciously or consciously we're running into this headfirst and deciding, hang on a minute, maybe we don't want to go in this direction and we're taking a step back in terms of the progress we want to achieve digitally. And finally, the last article I have is about development of a new type of vaccine. So this comes out of UC Riverside in California, who researchers have developed a new type of RNA vaccine. Now, won't dive into the pro-vax or anti-vax debate. However, what this does claim to do is that it can be a one-and-done RNA vaccine. So instead of having to take multiple jabs, they've developed a way to effectively protect someone against all strains of a virus, rather than, if you recall how COVID developed and the various vaccines that came over time, there were some types of vaccines which are protective against certain strains of the virus but were totally useless against others, so on. This claims to be able to just get one jab and cool, you're done and dusted. So the way it works is it uses an RNA interference instead of traditional inoculation-based methods. So instead of getting like a dead virus version, it mutates the virus, mutated virus weakens, preventing it from blocking the RNA interference process. So the weakened virus serves as the vaccine to strengthen the RNA interference immune response. So they tested this with mice and tested it with what is ordinarily a very lethal virus, and the mice showed protection for up to 90 days and seemed to work with both adult and baby mice. Obviously, still very early days, don't really know what long-term effects might be. So full disclosure, I'm not a huge fan of needles. If you told me that I only had to get one jab forever in the future and I would never have to get jabs again, I'd probably do it. Yeah, those are my articles for today. I can definitely see some linkages to a potentially very dystopian future, but maybe I'll let you take a stab at that to begin with, Ben.
Thank you. Definitely the dumb phone boom is interesting because it almost feels like our solution to a problem of our own manufacturing. Even if you take out all of the social media things, the concept of being always connected is, at least here in Australia, has become a big topic in both legislation and the workforce. Social media keeps us always connected to our friends and family. Work expects us to be connected all of the time. It almost feels like a rebellion, specifically since it's coming from Gen Z, a rebellion against the expectations that have been placed on us through things that previous generations have enjoyed or built in order to solve a different problem. Like it feels like the pendulum swinging the other way. We iterate in one direction and then we decide we've gone too far and we've now iterated in the other direction and we've gone what could be called backwards. We could go further, but it's just an observation on the dumb phone boom. In terms of a dystopia with this, I think it is how terrible things could go. We've already got scams happening with deepfakes and replacing an individual's likeness or audio with entirely fabricated versions. I think if we're to mix the predictive aspect that you've got with predictive motion, predictive tech, using AI to train these models, it becomes quite scary to think about a future where scams are not only predicting the way that you react, or systems that are geared to always be against you are fully predictive in how you will react and can adjust their own actions on the fly in order to combat your reaction, whether that is with fabricated tech and likeness of somebody. It could be the likeness of somebody you know, which would be even more manipulative. And mixing all of that together, I see a world where the line between what is real and what is fiction becomes almost impossible to determine, at least in a digital landscape, because of how quickly and effectively fake information and manipulative information can be created. Especially if we start looking at the emotion. If we can predict a smile or an emotion on a physical face, how long until we start predicting that emotion in a digital sense? We know that after reading a certain part of the article, you're going to be angry. We can serve up more information that fuels that anger. There are some news broadcasters that people would argue are already doing similar things. I would say that for me, a dystopia is a realm where we can't escape it. And even with a dumb phone boom, we cannot combat the fake and manipulative aspects of the digital age.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you there. I would extend that even further. So if we look at the robotics articles that we've covered, partially facial expression, but also locomotion, what's to say that all of this couldn't be applied to a genuinely humanoid-looking robot powered by the battery technology that you just described? It's very Blade Runner-esque, where you've got very humanoid-looking, feeling, sounding robots, synthetics, that live amongst you day to day, have jobs themselves. And at this point in time, we don't really have a way to figure out whether or not someone or something is who they say they are. There are controls over that in the Blade Runner universe to a degree, but it seems like we might be headed down that path if all of these technologies converge.
We almost need a Turing test. For those who haven't heard of a Turing test, it's essentially a test to determine whether or not the individual you're speaking to is a real human or not a real human, whatever system that may be. It feels like that validation will become more and more important as we go into the future, in both a digital sense and potentially in a physical sense, determining whether or not the individual we're engaging with is real.
Although that said, the Turing test is something that has been passed quite a few times already, and it seems like we're constantly shifting the goalposts about what artificial general intelligence could look and feel and be like. Is there ever going to be a test or some kind of gate or filter that we can have that will be deemed good enough permanently? I don't think so.
Probably not. I think the only test left that hasn't been fully defeated, there are, I'm sure, hundreds of them, but one of the most well-known that is yet to be beaten, as far as I'm aware, I might be wrong, is the Chinese room. From what I understand, nobody has created a system that has truly solved or beaten the Chinese room.
Can you describe what that is to listeners who haven't encountered it?
The Chinese room, best way to think about it, the fastest analogy, is imagine you are in a room, locked room, no information except for a small slip in the door and a giant book. The book is full of a language that you do not speak. In the Chinese room, it's Chinese, and it has every combination of Chinese characters imaginable and the correct response that you have to give if you receive a message with any of these combinations. It does not have any guidance as to what any of it means. It just tells you, if you see this, then you must respond with this. And you will be slipped a piece of paper in the door, which you need to respond to. So you go through your book, you find the right combination of characters as to the slip of paper you've received, and you write out on a new slip the correct response as per this giant infinite book. You then slip that piece of paper through the door. To the individuals who are giving you the paper, they're getting the perfect response every time. And from their perspective, you, the person in the room, fully understand Chinese and are fluent. But you in the room know that you have no idea what's going on, but you have a giant repository of information which you can refer to at any moment, which tells you what to do in every single possible situation. And the Chinese room, to be broken, you need to prove that the individual inside the room actually understands what they're doing. And from what I understand with our current AI and AGIs, artificial intelligence and artificial general intelligence, nothing has actually passed the Chinese room. Nothing has fundamentally understood the content that it is spitting out. Instead, it is a machine with an impossibly large repository of information that it is pulling from and spitting out the correct response, rather than actually describing maybe the thinking before creating a response. And as far as I'm aware, that's one of the most popular tests that is yet to be beaten by any AI or AGI so far.
Yeah, fascinating. I think one thing that we're thinking about, or one thing that we're talking about here, is based on our comprehension of the way we communicate and the way our world works, which, given the way AI models work and process information, it's just like a totally fundamentally different method of doing so. and the way AIs train themselves, or the way we've instructed them to train themselves, we also have zero clarity over what that process is like in order for them to end up in the functional state that they do. So I wonder if the test is meaningless because we're putting in place these restrictions based on our understanding when those restrictions don't necessarily make a difference to something synthetic, where as long as the answer is correct, it's correct. It doesn't really matter how we get there.
It's definitely an interesting philosophical line to draw in the sand of where do we go from being the difference between understanding and thinking. Maybe we could classify what AI, current AIs do as thinking, but maybe it's not understanding. Maybe those two are the same. Maybe they're different. I think you're right. Maybe there's a need to rethink what we define those terms to mean and to look at it from a perspective that's not just a human-centric, this is what thinking is, this is what understanding is, before we start classifying or declassifying something as intelligent.
Perhaps. Okay, sorry. Back on topic with dystopia. I think one of the social phenomena that might come out of this is probably it feels like more social isolation in the digital sphere, at least in the near term, for people who have encountered deepfakes, either of themselves or someone that they know. If you have a listen to the episode I did in the last season with Nadia, who's actively trying to combat deepfakes, it can feel very, very violating to encounter such a thing. I think what that might result in is, like I said, more digital social isolation. We currently conduct so much of our social interaction virtually. Like you and I are having this conversation remotely rather than recording in a face-to-face in a studio. Something like this, or all of the Zoom calls people hop onto while doing remote work, things like that sort of begin to lessen. And then we might actually translate that into more face-to-face time as a means of trusted communication, which is not necessarily dystopia, but it does have its own downsides in a way. I think that sort of inhabits a gray area between utopia and dystopia. Until we get to the point where humanoid robots that can accurately mimic how we smile and walk and live amongst us also take that away from us, depending on what it is they're tasked with doing, which at this point, it really depends what control we have over them.
Now I'm worried we're going to find ourselves in an iRobot situation with just robots walking around, glowing red eyes.
Look, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just really depends on how we build that future, as always.
Mm-hmm.
The Tesla robot, it's still in development. There's plenty of other robots that are in development. They can do specific tasks that humans can't do. They lift a lot more than a human could, for example. There are things which we can develop robotics and robotic tools for which would be assistive if they're controlled in the right way. But if they're not, then all the stuff we talked about could potentially be on the horizon. Cool. Maybe we'll leave it there for dystopia.
Yep.
How about we shift into utopia now? Why don't you go first?
Okay. Utopia. I think my utopia has a similar feel to dystopia, but for a different reason. I think you're right in terms of a sense of control. All of these things could be wonderful. Walking robots that can do the jobs that humans physically can't, or the jobs that it's too dangerous for us to do. Let's put aside the matter of sentience for a moment and say that these could be greatly assistive for us as a species and us as a civilization. But part of it is also the transition to being able to trust rather than having methods in place to combat things where the digital scams and not being able to trust information. I think a utopia for me is where we're able to disconnect and go to dumb phones, not because we're afraid or because we're conscious about the negatives, but because we want to, not because we feel like we have to. I think an age where we have robots moving around and a blended environment, and one where, ironically, one where battery tech has evolved to the point where it might only take you seconds to charge your phone. You won't need a phone that does all of that. One where we're socially supported, whether that's through AI or the community of people around us, where maybe those digital support networks and social media, they provide less feedback, positive reinforcement than the physical environment around us. And we do transition, we continue that transition away, but for different reasons. Personally, social media doesn't make me feel good. And I think a lot of people would agree. But I think Gen Z is transitioning away from smartphones as a form of rebellion. But why just them? Why not us? Why not other generations? Why not transition away, not because it's a way to rebel or a way to show what they want, but because it makes sense and it's the choice that is the best for us? I think back to times where I've put my phone down or had it taken away from me and how much more I'm engaged every time. But I don't feel like I can make that choice. I think that's what it comes down to for me. A utopia where we have the choice to disconnect and we're no longer drawn in by all of the digital facades or the trickery or the being forced to feel a certain way in the manipulation, and we can disconnect and go back to a physical sense. Maybe there's pitfalls there, but one at least where we can make the choice without being manipulated.
I totally hear you. And I take that same sentiment, but my ideas around the utopia panned out a little bit differently. The way that I looked at it was around combating loneliness. And I did reference this as earlier in the dystopia about how we might socially withdraw. But people already are socially withdrawing. Social media, while it fosters a network effect of some kind, it amplifies some forms of social connection and really mutes other forms of social connection. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of stats about how people are struggling to date and form relationships or meaningful ones nowadays, or the nature of relationships are changing as a result. And I would hypothesize that in the future, when we could have really convincing, or convincing to the point that you can't even tell the difference, a humanoid robot or a humanoid digital avatar actually becomes a very intimate part of your life. And you can take this into a dystopia path as well. Presumably, there's a supportive function to play in the same way that you spoke about how in utopia, there could be all of these tools that help us do things that humans can't in a physical sense. But what about from an emotional sense? I actually think there's a company over in the US that sells quote-unquote AI girlfriends. Mm. And it's specifically targeted at the lonely male in the same way that you said, why would Gen Z be the only cohort that is stepping away from digital phones? Why shouldn't anybody have a supportive digital companion who's able to be there emotionally when someone might not have that option otherwise? Absolutely. And I think that's at the very tip of a slippery slope into a possible dystopia. But I would say that if it pans out, I don't actually think it's necessarily a bad thing.
I would agree. I think if we're talking about the best case use or the most positive use case for some of this tech, if we're talking about predicting emotions and simulating the interaction with a real human being, then you've got avenues for therapy and the ability to socialize or have, like you're saying, support in a digital sense that maybe individuals aren't getting physically or in the world that they know for any number of reasons. Reminds me of the movie Her, but maybe with a little more healthy.
Yeah, totally. Even if it's something as simple as being able to receive a hug. Yeah. There's scientific evidence that getting held for 30 seconds releases a whole bunch of endorphins, even something as simple as that. To be able to read an emotion and figure out, hey, this person needs a hug. Mm-hmm. And to have that hug feel like the real thing could do wonders for a lot of people, I'd imagine.
I definitely think so.
All right. Shall we wrap it up there? I think that's a nice place to wrap up.
I think so. It feels nice, positive note.
Warm and fuzzy.
Fuzzy. Just like a robot hug.
Yep, just like a robot hug. All right. Thank you so much, Ben. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed yet another jam session where we talk about dystopia and utopia and prompted you to think about some ways of how you might want to build the future. In that regard, signing off with warm, fuzzy robot hugs to all of you. We'll see you next time. Ben, thank you once again.
Thank you very much.